Welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. Here are your hosts, Julie Fudge-Smith and Colleen Pilar.
Hi, welcome to Your Family Dog. I'm Colleen Pilar, and as always, I'm joined by Julie Fudge-Smith. But today we have a special guest. We have Jen Shryock, who is the creator of Family Paws. And I asked Jen to come on today because when I spoke to her recently, she shared the funniest story with me about life with her new puppy. Now, it wouldn't be so funny unless you know the background. Is that Jen has, currently she has three dogs, she has four kids, but she has fostered 70 rescue dogs, more than 70 rescue dogs over the course of her adulthood. So when she was telling me about all of the joys of living with a little puppy and how occasionally that made her want to pull her hair out, I said, you know what? I think it'd be great for people to hear that even people who know what they're doing think living with a puppy is challenging. So thanks so much, Jen, for coming on. We're so thrilled to have you.
We are. Well, thank you.
I am so thrilled to be here. It's like therapy.
So tell us a little bit about your puppy.
Oh gosh, he's wonderful. And he, I feel like I was saying to someone today, we've gone through the newborn stage, you know, where, oh my God, he hasn't pooped or peed or he hasn't done this. And is he breathing? And does he need to go out? And all those things. And then we eased into the toddler phase. Okay, everything in the mouth, everything in the mouth. He's going to put everything in the mouth. Oh my God, we're going to a beach house. What do we need to do? We have packed a separate suitcase for him. Then now we're entering into adolescence. So we do have some, he finds our cat very sexy. So we have that going on. So it's kind of comical. I'm enjoying all these phases, but I'm exhausted too.
And Rudy is a 6-month-old Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, correct?
Yes. And you know, it's funny because I definitely had a lot of friends say ahead of time, I was like, oh, he's just a Cavalier. I mean, I typically have had German Shepherds and Huskies and Boxers and all different types of very active breeds. And I grew up with Cavaliers. So I was thinking, oh, he's going to be the easy one. And he is. Don't get me wrong. He's wonderful. But you know what? It's still a ton of work. Holy cow. Holy cow. I mean,
babies,
you know,
gosh, of any species and any breed.
Babies. So much.
Yeah.
Babies. So much. And yeah, it's just like that again. So it's still wonderful, though.
Well, you know, I think that people forget, especially if you had a particular breed and you really enjoyed that breed. And I have a client who loves Weimaraners, and he's a retired individual and just got a Weimaraner puppy. And I'm like, not what I would have picked for you. Why? And he said, well, you know, I had one and I loved it. And he's finding this Weimaraner puppy to be a whole lot more than what he bargained for. And so I think sometimes we do forget. We remember the dog we had. We don't always remember the early phase of the dog we had.
So true. Yeah.
So
true. And I remember speaking with his breeder after he had been home for a little bit. And I'm like, you know, I just want to go to the bathroom and he's going to tell me about it. You know, and I forgot because, and she said, you did get a Cavalier. Don't you remember? And I'm like, yes, I do. I do. So, you know, remembering that there are certain things. I mean, with my chef, I was so looking forward to, and I'm very much enjoying that he's not on call 24/7, like my shepherd puppies who, my goodness, if a leaf fell down six houses over, they were going to let me know, you know? So there is that level and degree. And I think it's been a really exciting, fun learning curve, even for myself, having had so many different types of dogs in my home, to go through this again and really embrace the different characteristics of not only the individual, but the breed. It's so much fun. So I'm enjoying that, but I'm also reminded and humbled by the experience. It's really wonderful.
I think it's really important to understand the breed, you know, and, but I think that also becomes difficult when you're dealing with shelter dogs, because people look at it and say, oh, that's part Malamute and Dachshund.
True.
And I'm like, I don't see Malamute Dachshund. I see Boxer Lab, you know? So I think trying to figure out breeds. But I think there's also things you can think about, like small dogs have different challenges than big dogs do. And
absolutely,
I think that is something to keep in mind, too, that maybe you don't know the exact breed, but I do know that he's like a micro dog, and they are going to have particular challenges. House training is the one that comes to mind. Have you had house training challenges with this dog?
Honestly, he's the best in that department, but I've also been really focused on it. And because I think I'm not going to lie, it's so much easier to overlook things. Okay, it's much easier because he's small. So an accident, if my Shiloh Shepherd has an accident, it's going to be, it's going to ruin my week. Okay, that's going to really be a problem. I do have a steam cleaner handy. And, you know, whereas with little Rudy, I feel like, you know, I'm singing the Elmo song, accidents happen. You know, I mean, it happens, right? It's not a big deal. So you move on. So it is, gosh, the whole thing is, it is a little different. I know with my shepherd, you know, again, I use them as the biggest example. I did. There were things that I was very concerned about or stressed a little bit more, and I'm a little more relaxed about some of those things with little Rudolph, you know, but it's all good, you know. But again, well, the individual
within
the story
that you were telling me about last week when we were talking was as I'm recalling, you can straighten me out if I'm wrong, but you took him out in the evening for what you thought was just a short little walk, and then you went a little bit further than you expected. Can you tell us that?
Oh, yeah. So we went to the beach, and he was, it was in June, so I can't believe it feels like eternity since it happened. But we took him, and he, you know, it was our entire family, lots of kids, and I thought, oh, it's going to be great. We're going to take him to the beach. We're going to have him at the beach house. Oh, what trouble can that be? So as I started packing and getting ready, I put all our gear in there. And yeah, one evening while we were there, I chose to take him out. You know, we're walking around to go potty. And he did a beautiful job. And we just kept going. Now, I just had his leash and I had him on a collar. And I usually always have him on a harness if we're going to walk somewhere. I wasn't planning on going somewhere, but it was really nice. So we walked onto the pier and we walked out and he was doing great. His tail was wagging. He was doing great. Confident, good. All of a sudden, he just stiffened up and he started backing up. And I thought literally like either he or I was going to get off this pier and fall in the water. What was up ahead for him and at his eye level were these very spooky, scary yellow kayaks that were like facing towards him. He just like was like, oh no, big yellow monster. I'm not going near there. It never occurred to me, you know? So as we're walking, he totally started to panic. He started to back out and I thought I was going to lose him out of the collar. And I did think one of us was going to end up in the water. So it's a great reminder that he does great. But I still have to, you always have to be on your game. And I think I let my guard down and go, oh, he's so easygoing. We're going to, you know, it's fine. And yet I didn't have treats on me. I didn't have toys on me. I wasn't prepared for that scary interaction. And I could have lost him. So, you know, lesson learned, he never leaves the house without a harness on. But it's great. It's funny. Those little things happen to the best of us.
It's like we're always saying to our clients, did you take your treats? Did you take your harness? Did you have this? Did you have that? And every now and then we all sneak out with just like, oh, I'm just going out for a second. Whoops.
I'm constantly reminding my clients, you know, I tell them, look, I'm not going to make you wear a bait bag for 10 years straight. You don't have to strap it on and never take it off, wear it in the shower or whatever. But what I will tell you is it's probably in your best interest to wear one whenever you go for a walk. You may not use a single treat on your walk, and that's fine. Yeah. But boy, you are going to be so grateful to have it with you if you should encounter a really scary kayak, you know?
Yeah.
Or
because the kayaks that just appear out of nowhere on your walks are terrifying.
I know!
Well, and you know, to that point, like I got down on his level and I looked and I'm like, you know, that is an odd looking thing blocking your way. And if you've never, you know, and it's pointy and whatever. So it made sense. But I think also too, I'm going to be total true confession here. I think I have made the mistake also of letting some of my guard down. I was very meticulous with some of my other dogs in their training, but I have been like, oh, he's a small dog, you know, I've been a little, I definitely have to admit, and true confessions, I've been a little lazier, maybe not as on top of my game as I would be when there was maybe more at stake with other dogs. And that's actually really kind of hard to admit, but it's true. And it's a real thing to some mm-hmm. degree. So I have to get better. And I think reeling that in and saying it's equally as important, and all these life skills and all these things are equally important no matter the size or no matter the look of the dog.
Right. I think one of the things that happens with small dogs, one of the nice things, and in fact, I was talking to the Chihuahua owner about this, I said, if necessary, you can always pick him up and exit a situation that is really hard for you. I said, I don't have that option with my 100-pound burner, so I have to come up with other things. It's not the ideal option, but it is an option. And what I find is that oftentimes that makes for owners who seem to begin to think that their dogs don't actually have legs, that they need to be carried through the world. And that's not fair to the dog. You know, they're not down doing the things that they need to do. So I think with small dogs, it is much easier to say, oh, I have an out, or this is so much easier because I can always pick him up. But if they slip that collar, you can't pick him up. And
No.
So the other thing I was going to say, too, is I'm going to put a plug in for one of my blogs called What I Saw at the Farmer's Market, because you said something about getting down and seeing what was thing at his eye level. And that's one of the things I talk about in this blog is you need to remember that the dog is seeing the farmer's market from 18 inches up, you know, from the ground to about 18 to 24 inches. And that's a completely different perspective than what you are seeing at the farmer's market. So there's all kinds of things to consider if you're going to take your dog to festivals or markets or, you know, whatever, especially during the summer. Yes. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
I'm so glad you got down and saw what was going on at his level.
Oh, yeah. I love to do that. You know, and it's so interesting because it really did feel, I mean, the adventures just going on a vacation with him, I really, truly felt like I was packing for my toddlers. Mm-hmm. You know, the what if. Like, what do I bring if this situation happens? And there were rooms, there were escape routes, like sliding glass doors that opened up to the outside of the house in every single room. So I had to have tethering system and all those things. And there were lots of older children who don't necessarily think, you know, I know a little something, something about anything. So I couldn't rely on everybody to follow the rules as well as I might. They're not thinking about it, you know, as much. So it was really on me, and to remember all those things and think ahead to all, what are we going to do when, how are we going to manage this when, mm-hmm. you know, and that was definitely humbling as well. So, you know, it was a really good experience, but it took me at least 3 days to feel like I was settled in, and by then half my vacation was over. So, you know, it just like once we all got used to the environment, then it was cool, you know. And he did honestly, I have no complaints about this puppy. He did an amazing job. And I will say one of my gifts was mat work, having a place where he knew wherever that mat is, I'm going to go there. I'm going to relax here. Good things happen here. But I got to tell you all too, I brought so many toys, and you know what he wanted to play with? Ice cubes and water bottles.
There you go.
That's it. Yeah, it's a good reminder. You know? Yeah.
But for those who don't know what mat work is, can you just give a brief description of what that means for you and your dog?
Oh, yeah. So what it means is I really like them to feel that a place, and I usually use like a bath mat that has a nonstick surface. And wherever that is, that's where I want them to be. So I usually roll it up and put it away when I'm not working with it. So when it appears, good things happen there. And gosh, it's great because wherever we travel, we go. And wherever the mat is, they get on it. And, you know, that's a good place to have a Kong, to have a bone, to do whatever. We all have the understanding that when they're in that spot, we're going to leave them alone. So it's really, I find it very easy to work with. And it was just so great because right after we went on our beach trip, we also traveled to New Jersey and we're in four different hotels and visited my mom at a nursing home. And wherever that mat was, it could be on my mom's bed in the nursing home. And he was, that's where he would go. It was wonderful.
How early, so helpful. How early did you start mat work?
I started as soon as possible. I mean, 8 weeks, as soon as we can, you know, make an association and do some dinner or do some kibble on there or lick some, you know, some wet food or, I started it very early because it's been an essential part of my dog's routine. And I can't say enough about that. It's so handy. So handy. And you know what? What's beautiful is I have a picture of this. We were all having dinner. It was busy. And where's my puppy? He's laying on his mat. That's so beautiful. Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. Well, we should make that our episode picture if you would be willing to send that to us of your puppy mat.
Will.
That would be great.
Yeah. Yeah. Not begging. It was so much fun. Proud moment.
Yeah. No, I think about that because living with four grandkids and having a big dog whose nose is table height, Bear has learned that these are people that are more than happy to share. We're not happy to share, but I'm going to take it off their plate. And I didn't think in terms of mat work early on with him, and I should have. So
I have a bear, too.
Oh, you do? Okay. So anyway, forewarned people that this is a really good thing if you want to prevent mealtime tragedies with them.
Yeah.
So, but also just to give the dog a safe space or a defined concept. It's not even like a specific behavior, but, you know, like you said, when you went to visit your mom in a nursing home, there's a lot of new stuff there. Everything's new. And then mat appears. Oh, I know what I could do on the mat. Here are a few things that make everyone happy, including me. I get on the mat and I get treats and life is good. And
it's the familiarity and consistency. Mm-hmm. And honestly, they crave that, especially during those times that you're traveling. And I think one of the things in mentioning, you know, my foster dog work, that was something too. Whatever we could make consistent so they could transfer it in their new environment was always a gift. And that's one of the things that is really important. The dogs want to know what to do, right? So let's make it easy for them.
Did you do mat work with your foster dogs and transfer mat with them?
I did it with some of them. So more towards the end, I did a lot of that kind of thing also too with my cats, my foster cats. A lot of people think, oh, you can't train cats. And I personally totally disagree. I love working with cats. And, so we did a lot of work with the cats, believe it or not, to love their kennel, their carriers.
I was wondering too, I would think that with mat, especially if you've got, you know, I will use roll-up bath. I would use bath mats with clients as well because they're just so transportable and then they don't slide. You put them on a wooden floor, whatever, they just stay put. But I also think it's great if you're working with kids because it's a very bright line. It's like, here's the dog's green mat. And whenever the dog is on the green mat, you can't touch him. And so I like bright lines. I like very defined things because I think it's much easier for kids. Don't bother the dog when he's resting. Well, how do I know when he's resting? You know when he's resting because he's on his green mat. And so it's really clear, bright lines for kids. Certainly, that may not work as well with toddlers, but when you're talking about kids who are probably 5 or older, that would probably be.
I do. Yeah, I agree with you. And I want to go back to the thing, and then I want to give you another tip that I have with that in particular. But when you asked me about mat work with fosters, ironically, it was about 9 years ago since we last fostered, you know, all those dogs. So I wasn't as it's one of the newer tools that I've added since I've raised my own puppies with my daughter and that kind of thing. So I probably didn't do it as much as I would have liked to. And then to your point there, Julie, to have a safe zone and a definite visual One of the things I've done is use, you know, those poster boards, those like three trifolds mm-hmm. that you can kind of stand up on a table or something. I get those, or this works beautifully for young children. I get those and I have the kids either decorate or we put a picture of the dog sleeping or a stop sign, let them make that. And that will go around the dog's crate, the puppy's crate, when they're having their downtime. And having them put that up is a visual block. So the dog doesn't have this, the visual stimulation of the kids running around. And it really, it's like something that children participate in. And we talk about when that's up, he's having nap time.
Right. And then, especially if they're putting it up, then they are enforcing that barrier. Yeah. Yes.
And then we set the timer.
Clever idea.
Timer goes off, we take it down. So it works for the child and the dog, and they're participating, and they're part of creating this safe space for the dog. That worked well with my daughter and my shepherds, and because I did get a German Shepherd puppy when my daughter was 2.5, mm-hmm. and we needed those things. Yeah,
that's a great one.
And your company, Family Paws Parent Education, mm-hmm. really focuses on that. The whole concept of creating dog-aware generations and helping children learn to be very dog-savvy and respectful. So I love the concept of having the kids decorate the science poster board piece as a barrier. I've never even thought of that.
I hadn't either.
I think it's really cool.
You know, I learned it because otherwise, a lot of times we'll use blankets or something, but when you have a puppy who's going to pull it in and shred it, that doesn't work. So I needed something to be just inches away from the crate, and that worked beautifully.
I also liked it in conjunction with the crate, mm-hmm. so that even if the barrier got knocked down, right, or some smaller person who doesn't understand the timers moves it, the dog is still safe, and the kids are still safe. So it's kind of like an airlock. You know, you had two system, which I really, really like. Mm-hmm. So that it keeps the dogs really safe. So I was going to say, one of the things that we've talked about before on this program, my dog Zuzu is special, and mm-hmm. She has, sometimes she needs a break from my grandkids, go figure. And so what I put on the gate to my office is I made a sign that says Zuzu's alone zone. And so I think that's another, way that you can help kids understand that, it's not just stop, but this is her alone zone. And if she's in here, you need to ask to come in. I begged them to make the sign and they didn't. So I finally had to make it myself. And so now I think, wow, I kind of wish they would have made the sign because they probably would respect it better than they sometimes do. And neighbor kids don't always get it either.
No, they don't. It's really that. Yeah, I understand that.
That's another reason why I like the double barrier. So that if you have a kid who's over visiting and the barrier falls down, the dog is still safe, or the kid moves the barrier, you know, there's still that second layer of protection. So I think that's another reason why it's important is it's when you were talking about when you were headed to the beach, it's that looking ahead and trying to predict situations that I can have. Perhaps for me, it's always just the semblance of control. I have no control over my life. But I like to have the semblance or the idea that I might possibly be in control. So to have those layers of thinking ahead and how can I manage, then the management system doesn't seem nearly so burdensome because there's a plan that we're implementing.
Yes. Then you drive your family crazy because you have an idea of the plan and maybe they don't have an idea, or you're overdoing it, or you're overthinking it, or you forget that you packed these nifty tools for that particular situation. Yeah, there's all that too.
Yeah. Unfortunately,
there is such a thing as too much knowledge on some occasions where I do see myself overthinking things and realizing other people are totally fine with the way they've just been winging it. And I'm like, but what about this?
I know.
So if we go back to the whole experience of you've done dogs, you've had so many dogs go through your house. Mm-hmm. Have there been any typical puppy situations with Rudy that even though you knew to expect them, they still occurred or were frustrating or you know, so the house training, the nipping, the not wanting to settle in a crate. Did he have any of our common owner concerns?
Oh yeah. I mean, all of the above. I mean, you know, the house training or house manners really has come along mostly because I'm diligent and I stress so much, again, that too much knowledge, knowing other small, you know, people always saying, oh, they're hard to housebreak or whatever. So I was going to master that. So I feel like I covered that over the top. My kids are like, you know, fed up with that by now. The crate was an issue for me, you know, being able, you know, the whining and just feeling like, you know, if you don't admire him according to his admiration schedule and remind him he's cute, he is going to bark and let you know he's still there because you haven't seen him. You know, you haven't told him how cute he is. So there's that. And then, you know, getting the right puzzle toys and feeding, you know, just everything. I mean, it has been tricky. I mean, mingling him and meshing him with our other dogs. I mean, I've got a giant size breed and then a medium size breed and then cats. And I had the nerve to bring home this happy go lucky dog who just wants to be in everybody's face, you know? And so there's those things. And remembering I need to probably put him on a leash and have a drag line and use those barriers, use those play yards, use those gates. Yeah, it's management. It's a lot of management. I think a lot of families, you know, we want to forget that. We want them to have free reign, but they really aren't equipped to handle that. And he's still not, you know, and that's okay. That's what he needs to do. I want him to make good choices. So it's our job to set him up for success. So leashing, tethering, crating, play yards.
Right.
Yeah.
A little all bit of freedom stuff. Earned bit by bit, but totally. Earned is the key
yes,
part of it.
Absolutely. You have not totally. Earned this until, mm-mm. you know, and like I was working with the Chihuahua owner today, he was saying, I just can't seem to, you know, crate him or whatever, and he's always following
right.
around me. And I said, you know, you could put him on a leash
yeah.
and tether him to you so he goes with you.
Yeah.
And so we found a really cute and not expensive waist leash that comes complete with a treat pack right on the waist on the leash, and it was only like $15, which I thought was very reasonable. It had a little bungee cord, and I said, or you can do what my podcast partner Colleen does, and you can get yourself a carabiner and put it on the leash and wrap it around twice. And he was like,
that's right.
Wow, haven't thought of that. And I was like, yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, so it's great when you feel like you can offer somebody a simple solution.
Yeah,
but you know, management may sound simple, but it's not always easy. And I think that's one of the things that is the biggest downfall for most owners of puppies is we say manage, and they're like, How?
Right.
Well, and supervision. Go ahead.
My mom's big phrase, she's an early childhood education person, was creating a yes environment for children.
Mm.
So that was always her thought. And that the more times you had to say no to a kid, the more you needed to look around your environment and say, what's not cool here?
That's right.
And I think if we can look at puppies or dogs management in the same way, where, you know, what can I do to create a yes environment? This Chihuahua is wandering all over the house. Well, if we put him on a leash, odds are whatever he's going to do right near you is probably going to be a yes. You know, he'll be able to intervene more quickly or easily, and he'll be in a yes environment as opposed to a no environment.
Right.
I love that. And that kind of breaks into like the five types of supervision. And it's funny because we talk a lot about this in the Family Paws programs, but it's also true. Everybody has a different level. Supervision means different things. And when you have a puppy, it is essential that there is supervision for safety, for that puppy safety. And I think, you know, I know, and to help the yes environment so that the kitchen floor is not the potty. You know, and again, if you have multiple people in the household, and I definitely want families to hear this and understand this, it is very different to be just an adult in a home with a puppy or a new dog. But when you add children and other people to the mix and dynamics, it gets a little more complicated and complex and confusing, because keeping consistency is going to be a challenge.
Absolutely.
And I think that we don't account for that in the confusion it creates for our dogs and our, you know, and,
right.
it does. And supervision comes into play there too.
Absolutely. And I think that one of the things that, people think, oh, I just brought in another dog. There's just one more personality. Not really. It's one more personality that's interacting with however many more personalities there are in the house. So this is not just a one-to-one thing. This is a 1-to-5 thing.
And
if you are going to be completely different in how I potty train, the dog is just not going to get that clear signal. And
My husband
tough.
And I had a little bit of a conflict over that in the beginning, you know, because I had been so good all week with him, and then it was the weekend, and someone, you know, Joe was handling it. And, you know, those experiences so remind me of what are, you know, everybody goes through, you know, and we all have those challenges. And I think if we just genuinely put them on the table and say, okay, so you might have a different style and different way. Let's lay this all out so we can find the middle ground and agree to those things.
Right.
But let's talk about it, because differences are going to happen. And the more that we can communicate that, the better our animals can actually be successful.
Right. So, I also think too, it's for professionals. I took a couple classes with Zuzu. I took a couple of agility classes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she's not an agility dog because we're very cautious, splatty. And we may zoom through tunnels at home, but we are very careful of it. But it was really good for me to be sort of on the other side of things, to be in a classroom situation again. I think it's important for trainers to remember what it's like, or, you know, work with a puppy up close, or get a puppy, or, you know, when you get a new dog, it's always this reminder, like, oh, and I just have this desperate need to go back and apologize to every one of my clients. It's like, I'm so sorry.
It is humbling.
It is.
It's humbling. And that's one of the reasons I really loved fostering, was because I love that new experience. I like figuring it out. And I like that. But it's trying. I don't want to foster now.
Yes, move down to another phase in life. Okay, well, that was I think that was really interesting. Colleen, do you have anything that you'd like to ask or add to this discussion?
No, I just really wanted Jen to come on and share the thoughts that she shared, because I do think it's really easy to talk to your dog trainer and think, well, oh, I bet it's easy at your house. And the reality is, it's not easy at our house either, because dogs are living creatures, and they're a lot of work, and they're so worth it. But, boy, it can be a lot of work.
That doesn't mean it's bad or wrong. It just means it is what it is. And I think that we might have a little more information on how to make it run a little smoother, but it's not easy. It's work. And if it's not work. I think
there's something wrong.
Maybe something's wrong. Yeah. Yeah. It's dedication.
Yeah,
definitely. Well, I also too want to remind our guests that Jen had been on with us before, about a year ago, and we'll put a link to that episode where we talked about family paws, and lots of links to that. And I was so excited to have you come back on again. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
And
well, thank you. I'm always happy to come on.
Great. We'll have you as a regular, our yearly Jen.
Not yearly. Let's do more frequent. You guys are awesome.
Okay. I can do that.
Thanks so much.
All right. Take care.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Colleen and Julie would love to hear them. Call 614-349-1661 or visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.